are based on work history, lifetime earnings, and claiming age. Hi, everyone. I'm Kathy Poholsky. Welcome to The Art of Aging, a 20-minute podcast to encourage independence and peace of mind by informing, educating, and celebrating you. A conversation with Lauren DeGroot in just 30 seconds. First, your AOA tip of the day. Folks gearing up to tour a senior living community may wonder what questions to ask. Well, there are the common ones like monthly rates, criteria, staff to resident ratio, food, activities, and whether they accept Medicaid. May I suggest adding something like, there's a lot we've seen today, what didn't we see? Hopefully that will encourage them to think about something important to the prospective resident that would be good to know. For example, you said that your grandmother really loves music. While we didn't hear any today, we do offer music bingo, sing-alongs, and community musicians on a regular basis. We even partner with the school down the street. The choir director brings in a group just before their fall and spring concerts. Now back to our topic, Social Security retirement benefits. Joining me to talk more about it is Lauren DeGroot. Lauren is a financial advisor and partner at Adaptive Advice. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me, Lauren, and welcome.
Thank you, Kathy, and thank you for having me.
You bet. All right, so first question, why do Social Security retirement benefits matter?
Well, to start, for many people, Social Security is their biggest asset. So if you look at the present value of all future benefits that a person can expect to receive over their lifetime, on average, a single person will likely collect over $500,000 over their lifetime, and married couples can expect to collect over $1 million over their lifetime. So this is an insignificant amount of money. Second, this decision impacts many aspects of an individual's retirement income plan. For example, if someone takes Social Security early, they'll likely need to withdraw more from their investment accounts throughout retirement to cover that desired income need. Whereas if someone delays Social Security, they'll spend more from their investments early in retirement, but have a much lower withdrawal rate all throughout retirement. So really what it comes down to is the difference between a good election decision and a poor election decision can often cost someone over $100,000 or more over their lifetime. So it's a very important decision, and it should be made in the context of an overall financial plan that takes other assets and income streams into consideration as well.
Okay, thank you. Now, before we delve further into this subject matter, tell us a little bit about Adaptive Advice.
Sure. So Adaptive Advice is an RIA, Registered Investment Advisory Firm. Our advisors are all fiduciaries, so we will sit on the same side of the table as our clients and give them advice as if it's our own money, so putting their best interests before ours or our firm. We've developed a very niche practice, so we specifically help people transition into and through retirement. So when you think about retirement, there's so many big decisions that people have to make as they're transitioning from what we call the accumulation phase, where they're putting money away and they're still working, to how do we now preserve what we've accumulated and how do we live off of that in the most tax efficient manner. So there's a lot of major decisions, and I'll kind of elaborate on that a little bit. First off, Social Security obviously is a huge decision to make, and it's really the foundation you want to build the rest of the retirement income plan around. So when we look at Social Security, we want to help people optimize those benefits over their lifetime. And then looking at other accounts and other investments, so then we have to figure out, well, which accounts do we harvest from at what time, and how do we do that in the most tax-efficient manner? We also want to look at how people are invested. We want to make sure that their portfolios are appropriately aligned with their risk tolerance, their goals, and the time horizon in which they plan to access that money. Risk. Then we'll throw a stress test at the plan, and we'll see, okay, we want to make sure if any major risk event materializes that it's not going to derail any of the plans that we've built. So some of those major risk areas would be, what if somebody has a long-term care event? Are they going to impoverish the well spouse, or can they afford to pay for it out of their savings? What if the market pulls back and they were invested more aggressively than they should have been? We want to make sure that they don't have too much market exposure where they can't recover from a pullback. And then the other big one is for retirees is a death. Mm-hmm. So what if one spouse passes away early in retirement? You know, are there enough assets for the surviving spouse to, again, live their desired lifestyle. And then really the last big piece is legacy planning. So how do we make sure that while somebody is alive, if they desire to gift money, how do we do that in the most tax-efficient manner? What accounts do we pull that money from? Or do we do what we call qualified charitable distributions, where they're taking a portion of what their RMD and just gifting it directly to charity? Or do they say, no, you know what? I want to do all the things I want to do while I'm alive. And then when I pass away, I want to make sure then the assets go to charities, children, loved ones, whoever it might be. So when you're looking at an overall financial plan, there's a lot that goes into it. Mm-hmm. And so that's really where we specialize, is in helping people navigate those decisions with confidence.
So when it comes to retirement income streams, how is Social Security unique?
Social Security has four unique characteristics. And I'm going to address all four and then I'll elaborate on them. So Social Security is inflation adjusted, it's longevity protected, it's tax advantaged, and it's backed by a government promise. And you can't say that about any other income stream. So when we look at Social Security, it's inflation adjusted, meaning it will continue to keep up with the rising costs of goods and services. It's longevity protected, meaning you can't outlive it. And it's tax advantaged. And if you listen to Joe's podcast, you'll hear more about that. But basically, I know, Social Security is a tax. We are paying into the OASI Trust Fund with our, you know, with every check we receive, we're paying in. But then Social Security is actually taxed as well when you receive it. So it's, when I say it's tax advantaged, though, if the only income on your tax return is Social Security, you actually won't pay any federal income tax. Mm. But when you add in other assets, like a pension or retirement account withdrawals, the most that can be taxed is 85% of the Social Security benefit. So, when looking at how Social Security is taxed, I mean, you take a dollar out of an IRA, 100% of that dollar is subject to federal income tax. Where with Social Security, if you receive a dollar of Social Security, the most that's subject to income tax is 85 cents on the dollar. And then backed by a government promise, that's kind of self-explanatory. So we won't go into that too much today.
All right, three major categories of benefits?
Yeah, so there's three major categories. The first one is your own retirement benefits, which are based on your own worker's record. The second is a spousal benefit or ex-spousal benefit, and those are based upon either a current spouse's benefits or an ex-spouse's benefits, and I'll get into the details here in a second. And then the last is survivor benefits. So when we're looking at benefits as a whole, if you're an individual and you've never been married, you know, it's easy to look and go, okay, I qualify on my own worker's benefit. But if you're married or you've ever been married, or you're married or your spouse is deceased, it gets a lot more complicated, because at that point you need to look at, okay, is it better for me to take my own benefit or a spousal benefit or a widow benefit? So when it comes to your own worker's benefits and spousal benefits, you can take those as early as age 62 and as late as age 70. If you take spousal benefits early or your own benefit early at 62, it will be reduced. If you wait past full retirement age, you actually get an 8% delayed retirement credit. So your Social Security benefit will continue to go up by 8% each year that you delay. With widow benefits, however, you can take those as early as age 60 and as late as age 70. And it gets a lot more complicated there. So I won't get into too many details. But the biggest thing to remember is with your own worker's benefit or spousal benefits, you can take them as early as age 62 and as late as age 70. With spousal benefits, to qualify for a spousal benefit, you have to be married, and you have to been married at least a year, and you have to not qualify for a benefit that's more than 50% of your current spouse's primary insurance amount. So basically, let's say that my spouse, his benefit is $3,000 a month. And mine is, $1,700 a month, right? Half of his $3,000 would be $1,500, but mine's $1,700, so I would take my own at that point, right? But if my own benefit was $1,000 a month and half of his is $1,500, then I could take half of his, so I could take $1,500 a month as opposed to the $1,000. To take a spousal benefit, though, your spouse has to be collecting their own benefit. So I couldn't take half of my spouse's benefit, even if I'm eligible for it, until he's collecting. So you can see where this gets really complicated. Yeah. So those the three main are retirement, spousal, and survivor.
And okay. Yeah. No, and I've seen you presenting to groups. In fact, I've seen it on a number of occasions. And this is one of those topics. I think, you know, people think Social Security, how tough can it be? And then you go in to explain this in the way that you're able to do that. And it's so cool, Lauren, to watch the light bulbs go on in the room of people going, yeah, that makes sense. And then the questions that they pose. And I think I bring this up mostly because people need to understand this is kind of complicated. Mm-hmm. And there are options available to them. And the more they know, the more they can benefit. And so folks listening out there, if you ever get a chance, obviously, to see Lauren or just someone who is credible in this area, it is worth your while mm-hmm. to go and at least listen to what they have to say, because it is, it's just amazing, and you do articulate it so well. So thank you for that. One of the big things people are thinking about is, how do I know when the best time is for me to take Social Security? And there's no cookie cutter answer to this.
I know. I get
but
this
how,
all the time.
How would you explain that to somebody, like maybe in a seminar, who's raising their hand and going, what do I do?
Yeah, so I think it's important to look at your unique situation and go, okay, if you've, like I said earlier, if you've never been married and you're single, you know, it's a lot easier to go, okay, you know, the break-even point for a single person is, you know, roughly early 80s, call it 83, 84. So if they take early, they'll get a smaller check, but more of them over their lifetime. Whereas if they delay till 70, let's just say, they'll get a larger check, but less of them over their lifetime. And the, like I said, the break-even point's around 83, 84 for a single person, never been married. So you can kind of look and go, okay, longevity-wise, I think I'm going to live past that. Then you're actually better off delaying till 70. When it comes to married couples or widowers, it's a lot more complicated because, and I didn't get into this, but I will real quick, with survivor benefits, you can pick and choose. So you could actually take a survivor benefit early at age 60 and then switch over to your own later. Or you could take your own at 62 and switch over to the survivor benefit at full retirement age. So there's all these different rules and different things to take into consideration. So to answer your question, know what benefits you're eligible for, right? So if you've been divorced and you were married more than 10 years, you may be eligible for an ex-spousal benefit. So then you get to pick between your own or your ex-spouse's benefit. If you're currently married and you've been married more than a year, then you know it's worth looking into, you know, what does my benefit look like and what does a spousal benefit look like? So it's more than just longevity. You know, you also have to look at your other assets. So for some people, they may not have the resources to delay. Whereas, you know, in our practice, we see a fair amount of people that have longevity and that have resources, and they decide, yeah, it does make sense for both of us to delay as long as possible. That said, we also do split strategies often where we say, okay, let's delay the highest wage earner's benefit as long as possible. Because at the death of the first spouse, that highest benefit will then be payable to the surviving spouse. So let's say my spouse's benefit's $3,000 a month, mine's $1,500. He passes away, I get $3,000 a month, and my $1,500 a month benefit goes away. So we want to delay the highest wage earner's benefit as long as possible. And sometimes it can make sense for the lower wage earner to take early, and we call that a split strategy, so that you can get some cash flow into the household early on while still maximizing that survivor benefit. So there's a lot that goes into this, and what I would say is know what benefits you're eligible for, but do sit down with somebody that knows the ins and outs of the strategies and that can look at it in the context of your overall plan. I always hesitate to help people that say, hey, can you just help me with Social Security? Because you don't want to look at that decision in a vacuum. You really want to look at it in the context of, okay, what other assets do you have? And, you know, does it make sense for us to delay Social Security and then maybe do some Roth conversions where we're taking money from IRAs and pushing it into Roth while we're delaying and creating more tax efficient income all throughout retirement? So there's a lot more that goes into this than just, how long am I going to live? And, or, you know, I'm going to retire at this point and then I'm just going to take. So yeah, you've got to look at the overall plan.
So for people who are listening out there, and there, again, there's probably no cookie cutter response to this, but they might be thinking, okay, Lauren, when you're saying, you know, talk with somebody, talk with a professional, at what point do they do that? If they're looking at something like retirement planning and discussions about Social Security, at what point are they picking up the phone and calling that trusted financial advisor?
I personally think the sooner the better. There's a lot that goes into this even before you go to take Social Security. So what account should I be contributing to while I'm still working? We find that a lot of people end up way overfunded, meaning they've put so much money into 401ks, pre-tax 401ks, that when they get to RMD age, and for everybody that's a little different, 73 to 75, but when they have to start taking requirement minimum distribution, so for those of you listening, it's about 3.75% of everything you've saved in your 401ks, IRAs, all pre-tax, you have to start taking that money out when you get to RMD age. And so what we're finding is that there's a lot of people that are going to get, you know, they're going to delay Social Security and have these high Social Security benefits, and maybe they have a pension, and then their RMDs kick in, and they actually push themselves sometimes into a higher income tax bracket. So why I say start sooner is because then we can look at, okay, are you overfunded? And instead of contributing to 401ks or IRAs now, maybe we need to start contributing to Roth, maybe we need to, I mean, there's so many different things to take into consideration. When we're looking at Social Security specifically in a vacuum, again, try not to look at it in a vacuum, but if you're going to, it's starting around 60, unless you're a widow, then, you know, I would say, yeah, within a year of taking, of when you become eligible to take Social Security, I think is when you would absolutely want to pay attention.
Okay, cool. All right. So one question that listeners may be asking is, will Social Security be there for me? That's the million-dollar question.
Yes,
how do you respond to that?
We get that all the time. In short, it will depend on the solvency of the OASI trust fund. Currently, the trust fund is fully funded through 2034, and then after that, it can cover approximately 77 cents on the dollar. That's not very comforting for most people. So between now and 2034, they'll have to make changes. You know, they can borrow from the OSDI, or they can borrow from one of the other trust funds to shore up the difference, but then there could be a shortfall there too. So likely changes between now and then. Number one, they may increase the payroll tax. So right now, out of every paycheck, we're paying in 6.2%, and our employer's paying in 6.2% for a total of 12.4%. That basically is what's funding the Social Security benefits for those people that are currently collecting. So if the current payroll tax is at 12.4%, they'd have to increase it by about 3.24%, and that would improve solvency. They also can increase full retirement age. So for our parents, their full retirement age was 65 for you, and well, we won't give away your age, Kathy. No, I'm just kidding.
Soon to be 58. I'm good with all of it, Lauren. It's all okay.
Most people, their full retirement age is somewhere between 66 and 67. So they've actually already pushed back full retirement age. It will probably be 70, 75 by the time I collect. But yes, so they'll gradually increase the full retirement age. And they could also increase the earnings cap. So if each of us are contributing 6.2% of every paycheck into the OASI trust fund, but it's up to a certain cap, this year it's $160,200 is the cap. So if they increase that cap, basically, in essence, they'll be taxing more of higher wage earners' dollars. So some combination of these changes we'll likely see between now and then in 2034. But I do want to say that we've ran different analytics. I'll give credit to Joe. Joe's team at Covisum, they're the software, the folks that develop the software. And so they've ran different analytics around these numbers. And we've looked at, okay, what if a single person that lives till 83 or 84, and they do get a benefit cut, were they better off having taken it early versus taking it later? And the answer is no, they're actually still better off taking it later, even with a benefit cut. But again, a lot of this is going to depend on life expectancy. So long story short, don't run out there and just collect Social Security right away when you retire because you're worried that it's not going to be there. We hear that all the time in our seminars. Well, I just took it because I don't trust that it's going to be there, or because I didn't know. There's a lot of information out there and professionals that do specialize. So more than anything, gather as much information as you can so that you can make an informed decision.
Wonderful. Talking with Lauren DeGroot about Social Security retirement benefits today. I'd like to thank Lauren for joining us, my husband Mike for making us sound so good, and of course to all of you for listening to The Art of Aging, a podcast to encourage independence and peace of mind by informing, educating, and celebrating you. I'm Kathy Poholsky, inviting you to join us again as we will be posting new segments every 2 weeks. Till then, may you find meaning in each and every moment, hence discovering what I believe to be the true art of aging.